So what is that like? You wake up, you have 8 missed calls.
I remember word for word. You told me, this is Sean, don't worry, but Joe got jumped.
Around 3 a.m. on May 12, 2013, I made a phone call no one would ever want to make. It was to my friend Joe's parents. I told them they needed to come to the hospital.
We were trying to call the hospital, trying to call the police, trying to get some information. It's a half-hour drive, and I kept thinking to myself, geez, I hope he didn't scratch his face or get his, you know, because he's a beautiful face. I always love, I mean, he's a handsome boy.
Or,
his poor nose, he's broken it so many times. And then I had 1 second of a flash where I thought, maybe this is worse.
Earlier this fall, our intern, Sean Gannon, came to us with a story he thought one of us should produce. The more we learned about it, the more we learned it wasn't our story to tell. Here's Sean.
Pat and Denise Sharkey live in Norwood, Massachusetts. It's about 30 minutes south of Boston. Their son, Joe, first fell in love with the game of basketball in his bedroom upstairs.
You can go see his basket.
Still there.
And it's still there, Fisher-Price, and a little Nerf ball. And Joe and I would play. I'd be on my knees, and Joe would be doing what he's doing.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. That's all you'd hear upstairs.
But it would be pretty much every night before he went to sleep, he wanted to play basketball.
I didn't meet Joe Sharkey until long after his Fisher-Price days, but I've heard plenty of stories about his earlier years in basketball. As it turns out, Joe was considered quite the phenom.
You know, fourth, fifth grade, like, wasn't great, but something about the game just, like, made me want to keep playing. Seventh grade came around, and I got ranked, like, 20th in the country or something like that.
So yeah.
At the time, I was like, wow, this is so cool, but looking back on it, you know, it is cool, but, like, it, like, caused a lot of pressure.
In 2006, the Boston Globe ran a front-page piece on Joe and the trend of making stars out of middle school basketball players. In the article, his dad, Pat, commented that young players are like seeds. You don't know which ones will blossom. Here's Pat reading an excerpt from the story.
As the young Sharkey sits before a bowl of chips and dip, the notion of him one day becoming the face of a blockbuster marketing campaign for a multinational corporation may seem unfathomable. Not to Adidas.
Pat was proud of the article, but it was more complicated for Joe.
I've always been a pretty shy person, so I was like, oh, I hate this. Like, it was kind of cool being recognized for being good at what I love doing, but I became known as, like, Joe Sharkey, like, basketball. Like, that's all that accompanies him, and I really didn't like that.
But Joe continued to shine. By the time he was ready for high school, a number of New England prep schools wanted him. He chose Northfield Mount Hermon, a boarding school 100 miles from home. Everyone just calls it NMH. Joe became a standout player for their nationally ranked basketball program. It's coached by John Carroll.
As a guard, he was a terrific rebounder. He was a great passer, terrific court vision. He was a guy that understood how to get the hot hand the ball. So he really had a high IQ. A kid was really a facilitator that other guys loved to play with.
Joe's success at NMH drew the attention of many Division I programs. He went to Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. That's where Joe and I met. It was our first night of college. We were fast friends. I played baseball and he played basketball. We spent a lot of time at one particular off-campus house shared by members of those two teams. It's affectionately known as the Mansion. I mention it now so you know what Joe's referring to when he and I talk about the night in 2013 that changed his life forever.
So it was Saturday.
This was Saturday, May 11th.
Mother's Day was May 12th.
Mother's Day was the next day.
Yeah. I remember just hanging out up in your suite. And then we went up to, like, Sully's house, right, the mansion. And I do remember walking down the stairs outside of the mansion. For some reason, that's the last memory that I have, but it's so vivid for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Let me fill in some of the blanks. We were walking home to our dorm that night, and we came upon an argument unfolding in the street. We recognized some of the people involved, others we didn't. Then things got physical. Joe was standing closer to the guys arguing, and he got hit. One knockout punch sent him to the pavement. His skull was shattered, and he suffered severe brain bleeding. He was rushed to Rhode Island Hospital and eventually placed in a medically induced coma. He didn't wake up for 3 weeks. When Joe's parents first arrived at the hospital, not everyone expected him to survive.
Jason, the detective, was given information by the Brown Police Department and the hospital in combination that he was investigating a homicide. I was clueless. We were asked, do you want to see a social worker? And I said very quickly, oh no, I think you have us mixed up with somebody else. We're here to see Joe Sharkey.
2 days later, Joe had emergency surgery to reduce intracranial pressure caused by his brain swelling. A segment of his skull was removed and put in a freezer. Doctors would replace it later. In the meantime, Joe's appearance took on a different look.
They staple your head with these gigantic, they're as big as the tong on this fork, to put you back together. And that's how we saw Joe, with a shunt in the back of his head, the staples. He's all black and blue and puffy.
When I saw Joe, I barely recognized him. He was on a ventilator and had tubes going in every direction. The staples looked like train tracks that had been laid hastily on top of his head. I was terrified, and his family was scared too.
I mean, we had each other, the three of us, and a lot of friends in the basketball team, the athletic department. Just people that Joe has touched over his life all came forward, all came to visit.
For those who couldn't come, Joe's sister Sam created a blog.
So this is an entry from Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. Our boy keeps getting stronger. Again, Joe had a zillion visitors today. A few of his close friends from NMH made the trip to see him. My mom loved chatting with them about the hell all of the cavemen raised at boarding school with Joe. Boys will be boys. Still no movement with his eyes or mouth, unfortunately. He just responds to our presence by moving his right hand, but hey, I'll take it. He's doing great, and we're just a week out. His heart, mind, body, and soul are all joining together to overcome this, and that he will.
Sam seemed pretty confident, but not everyone shared her optimism.
It wasn't until I saw him in the hospital where I understood that this was really a life and death situation.
That's John Carroll again, Joe's high school basketball coach.
Like, it was just a really heavy scene to walk into. And then seeing the guy that I really care about and, you know, who we've grown very close to, a person that I love, and see him in that position was really overwhelming.
Thankfully, that grim scene didn't last forever. Joe's condition began to improve, and he was slowly weaned off the machines that sustained his life. He woke up from the coma after about a month, and he was moved to the brain injury ward of Spalding Rehab Center in Boston.
When I saw him in rehab, when I saw him in the hospital, he only had up days. And the fact that they were saying he wasn't going to do this, he wasn't going to do that, you know, you could see the conviction and the resiliency in Joe that he was going to do it.
He literally had to learn how to first sip, then eat mush, then learn how to chew, learn how to swallow. He had to learn how to speak.
When I got hurt, I was 196 pounds, like in the best shape like I've been in my life. And when I got out of the hospital, I was 140 pounds. That's when I started to think about basketball and just like totally stressing, like just losing my mind about how I was never going to be able to play again, all this stuff.
Joe did play again. In May of 2014, after doctors lifted some of his physical restrictions, Joe played in the annual alumni game back at NMH. The school has graduates all over Division I and professional basketball. But that year, Joe was the star.
I mean, it was really a storybook. He gets a pass, he shoots it, the very first shot goes in, it's a three-pointer. The place went crazy because everyone in the audience knew what was happening, you know, and the fact that that kid, just over a year ago, I mean, maybe a year and 2 weeks, was in the situation he was in, and now here he is. I mean, it was really an unbelievably inspiring moment for everybody who saw it.
He wasn't yet 100%, but he was looking more like the Joe we all remembered. Over this past summer, he joined the Brown basketball team for their off-season workouts. Joe was hoping to earn a starting spot this fall.
For some reason, I felt like my comeback wouldn't be complete, like wouldn't be a real comeback or a successful comeback unless I actually made it back onto the court, like mm-hmm. playing competitive Division I basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a cool goal for me to set for myself, but I've realized that I made that too much of a focus and school still has to stay number one.
Joe decided to become a non-playing member of the team so he could focus on other things. His high school coach thinks it's the right call.
So many athletes have to make that transition when the ball stops anyway. And watching Joe having to go through it a little bit earlier, I think there is silver lining there, and he's making an unbelievable adjustment to life without basketball. So yeah, it's heroic what he's done. His comeback has been complete. The fact that he's not dressing for Brown is, you know, that's not even a consideration for me.
But there's a bit more to it for Joe's dad.
I would love to see him step out on the court again and to play. I used to love watching Joe play basketball because he played a different game. He played an elegant game, but he's happy.
He's happy.
I'm happy, yeah. I'm just really content, like more content than I've ever been. Mm-hmm. There's only so many chances I feel where somebody actually sees that, like, they're loved, and like you can see it so clearly, and that's like an amazing feeling.
Joe's also developed new passions in his life. He even dropped the major of choice among athletes at Brown, economics. He switched to philosophy. Joe says that in many ways he's better off now than he was prior to the injury. But what about the rest of his family?
No, I am definitely not.
Nope.
Yeah, took 10 years off my life.
Nope.
Some of the peace that we expected in our lives as our kids got older was taken from us because there's always that worry
and
of...
it may never return.
Even so, the Sharkies are finding ways to stay positive.
It almost feels like he can endure anything now. I feel that about him. I feel like he's been through the worst. He's broken down to nothing again and he built himself back up.
He's a very strong tree in progress. He's blossomed. But you don't know where the end is going to be. None of us do.
Don't ask Joe what his future holds. He doesn't know either.
No, I don't, honestly. Just feel comfortable with how I'm living, where I'm going. I'm not ready to define myself totally yet. I've got a long time to go before I do that.
For now, Joe's sights are set on graduating from Brown University in May. He's just 1 year behind his original class. If you ask me, that's what I'd call a comeback.
That's Only a Game intern Sean Gannon. His story was produced with help from Karen Given.